Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tennis Weekly podcast with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Film Club, we review the eagerly anticipated and much-hyped tennis movie Challengers, starring Zendaya. Joel, Kim, today's the 30th of April and we're here to talk Challengers. It's been taking the box office by storm. Tennis Twitter has been sent into complete meltdown. We're no longer a threesome, but we are talking threesomes as a foursome with Sarah Carson, culture editor for the iPaper, columnist, reviewer, interviewer, and our non-tennis opinion leader for today. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Sarah, we've known each other for quite a while. I didn't think that our kind of our much overdue catch up would be happening on a tennis podcast. Did you? And when did we last see each other?
I think we last saw each other when we met up on holiday in Mallorca, or rather we crashed, I and another friend crashed your family holiday. And no, I did not think that you would ever be asking me on your tennis podcast. I was quite surprised when you texted me out of the blue. I don't think I'd heard from you in a few years, possibly just a happy birthday, which is what we usually manage.
Yeah.
Is that how Chris treats his friends?
I do say happy birthday, though. I do remember.
Reveal all his secrets.
We nearly share the same birthday.
Yes, we're one day apart, so we have to remember. And I think I have it easier because mine's first, right?
Yeah, yours is first, so then I always feel bad by the time you text me about mine.
Because I've waited for you to forget, so maybe I'm not a great friend after all. But yes, it's great to have you here. It has been a while. But rather now than never, and rather now talking about tennis. So in terms of the reason why we think it's very important that we have you on is because in your professional capacity, you are an expert in all things culture. Whereas I would say that we might not be, we're definitely tennis experts, I would say.
Hang on, I'm a cultural style icon. Can you not see this headband, mustache? And I've got my AMC jumper on as well.
Yes, I think you're rocking. I did say tennis core was the brief for this one. It was quite a late addition to the request list for this episode. Kim, you're kind of doing the line judge, sort of.
I love that, Kim. You look like you're going to sneak into Wimbledon in that outfit.
It's not Ralph Lauren, but it's the nearest thing I could sort of conjure up. But yeah, I feel overly formal to be sitting like, you know, my bedroom at 7 p.m. when I've finished like work for the day. But it's, yeah, the closest tennis thing I had. And Joel, I mean, just on your moustache, it does look like you've extended
80s.
It out with like,
yeah,
tape
it does.
But is it actually real?
Stick on.
Kim, how dare you? No, it is real. And actually, you should count yourself lucky because last night I was actually debating whether to have a goatee. I was in the bathroom and I was thinking how rogue shall I go, but yeah, if I was going to go full on 80s, I feel like I would have to have a mullet, and my head just doesn't grow that way, so
it's for,
yeah,
the best.
Mustache, no mullet, yeah,
definitely.
Thank
for
God.
The best, whereas Sarah's kept it classy, almost as an attendee, I believe, almost in the royal box of Wimbledon.
Yeah, I have to say I don't have any tennis garms. I thought I might have something with, like, I don't know, a tennis sport brand on it. Like, there is absolutely nothing. So I attempted, you know, collars. The tennis players wear collars, right?
Yes, I can see a collar doing well. But we'll have to send you some Tennis Weekly merch so that you're ready for all things tennis in the summer. Now that you are a tennis fan, obviously, after watching the movie.
I love
yes,
that.
Exactly. But in terms of why we have you on the podcast, we did say you're an expert in all things culture and film, and we were too scared to go and ask for 3 tickets to Challengers because of the connotations. So we did not want to do that. We also wanted to make sure that we had someone on the podcast who could act as a control, because we have a tennis podcast. We can't hide it. We're pretty into tennis. And we believe that hopefully you're very into culture and not too into tennis. And we're going to ask you a couple of questions to clarify that, Joel, aren't we?
Yes, exactly. We want to ask you some questions just to get to know you a bit better. And I mean, one question I always have to ask all of our guests is how do you take your cup of tea? It's something we ask all our guests. We've had some weird answers. We've had some wonderful answers.
Not exactly a tennis question, Joel.
We've had some boring answers.
Tennis Weekly.
Tennis Weekly. But yes, how do you take your tea?
I am quite boring. I just have a little bit of milk, cow's milk or beef milk, they actually call it in the coffee shop at the end of my road.
Ooh, wow.
Semi-skimmed. Not too much, still like it quite dark. And, you know, my favorite tea bag is the, I think it's Marks and Spencer's Luxury Gold Blend, I think it's called. It's nice.
Yeah.
Not tried that one.
I actually think this might be one of our most comprehensive answers we've ever had to that question, Joel.
Oh, maybe I overcomplicated it. Sorry.
No, you've just showed a sense of class.
Definitely not boring.
Okay, we should get to some actual tennis questions now.
Actual tennis. So, Sarah, when you were younger, like many British people, you know, maybe don't follow the whole tour, but often tune into Wimbledon. So was that you as a kid on your sofa at home when Wimbledon came around every year? Like, did you watch it growing up? And if you did, do you have an overarching memory? Maybe a player that you used to watch or a match, like an epic match that you remember?
No, I actually never watched it on TV. Everyone at school used to play it. We would all get put into this tennis academy, short tennis academy, in fact,
academy.
For like Easter holidays. But I don't remember ever watching Wimbledon on TV. I do now. And definitely when for the past probably like 15 years, I've watched it. But I always have to remind myself of how the scoring works. I don't know why that just won't go in. I can't play this. I tried recently. I have this idea that one day I could be really good. And
Zendaya?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if she's got really into it, I sort of think maybe I could too. But I tried to play recently and it was just embarrassingly bad. It was a humbling experience because I have always thought that just a bit of training it would be me, but that has not come to pass. But I don't have any memories of it, really. I mean, I've been to see it once. I've been to the and when I lived in Madrid, but was it the final in 2013 with Andy Murray? I remember that one particularly well.
Oh, that's good knowledge.
That is very good knowledge. Yeah,
but maybe you know too much about tennis. Yeah.
I sort of love that you don't know a lot about tennis, or you've not really come from like a junior background and
she's
following
a senior
it
because, tennis player.
I'm really curious to get your opinions. We're getting it from outside of the tennis fandom as well. And I think that's what's so exciting about this film is the fact that it's out there. It's mass media. It could potentially appeal to everyone.
Well, with the idea of getting into tennis, Zendaya did say that her knowledge of tennis prior to filming this was that she knew Serena and Roger Federer, but that was about it. And then she watched every single video of every match online. So I don't think you've quite done that level of preparation for the podcast, have you, Sarah?
Absolutely not, I'm afraid to say.
No, you've completely passed the test.
Her prep must have been ginormous because every video of every match that's online, that would take her about a decade, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe she was watching the deep cuts of Sabine Lisicki fans. Was she watching all of the highlights of matches past?
Was she actually watching Challenger level or just Grand Slam finals?
Who knows? But she starred in a tennis film, and we have to warn our audience that there will be spoilers. So if you have not seen it, it might be the perfect time to pause it before you then come back. And this can be your perfect companion to viewing, almost like a film club. But if you would like spoilers and you'd like to know what it's like before you go and see it, then please do continue listening with us. So Challengers is from the visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino. Challenger stars Zendaya as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach and a force of nature who makes no apologies for her game on and off court. She's married to a champion on a losing streak, and Tashi's story and strategy for her husband's redemption takes a surprising turn when he must face off against his washed up former friend, Patrick. And that was also her former boyfriend. So as you can see, we get into a very complicated situation there as past and presents collide and tensions run high. And Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? So, I mean, that's a pretty good summary of what the film was like. We'll go to you first, Sarah, in terms of what were you expecting about the film? And what was kind of your first impression leaving the cinema?
So I had heard loads and loads of hype about this film. Everyone I knew, all the film critics that I knew were ecstatic and very, very positive about it. I'd heard it was really sexy, a lot of sexual tension rather than actual sex scenes, very steamy, all about desire. I knew that it was from Luca Guadagnino, and he directed Call Me By Your Name. He'd also directed, is it A Bigger Splash? He directed a series called, I think it was called We Are Who We Are. A lot of series that are all very led by desire, kind of studies of desire. But to be honest, that didn't put me off, but it made me think it was going to be a much more serious film than it ended up being. In the end, I just found it so much fun. Like when I stepped out of the cinema, I mean, it was steamy. I felt like I needed a cold shower. I was like beaming the whole way home. I just haven't had that much fun in a cinema in so long. Because I just think, I think the fun element had been missed out of everyone's reviews, really. I just found it enormously silly. It was sexy, but just a good time.
I mean, I got a very good tip from Chris actually before I went, because he said, don't take your mum to see the film. And I'm really glad he messaged me that, because it was steamy, and at times in the cinema I was sort of feeling a little awkward.
It's almost soft porn at times, wasn't it? I think I don't think I'd been to the cinema and I've not been to like an R-rated film before or anything like that. But I think in terms of my kind of impression, I thought from the trailer it would be more tennis and less of like the drama, but also kind of a bit sillier at times. So I think I was prepared to take it too seriously and too tennis-y. So I think I probably set myself up to not be in the lighthearted spirit of it potentially. When I left the cinema, I thought, well, what was the point a little bit? But I think the point was probably that maybe it wasn't for someone who was literally looking at the tennis technique and getting more and more irritated. But I don't know what you think, Kim.
Yeah, I don't think it was really aimed at a tennis audience. But coming in as a tennis fan, I kind of left thinking like, well, I don't really know what the crux or what the point of the film was. And I didn't actually go into reading too much about it, so I really didn't know what to expect apart from asking you, Chris, for your immediate thoughts.
I
kept comparing it to Wimbledon, you know, the film with Paul Bettany, which I think we'll probably get onto later, but that was my kind of comparative
quite different
point.
Yeah.
It's quite
completely different.
Yeah, Sarah confessed you haven't watched that, have you, Sarah?
I don't think I have.
I can't
maybe
believe
once
that.
But it's forgotten.
Back in the day, me and Joel did a review episode of that film, actually. But obviously with no technical film knowledge. but that was like a nice comfort blanket of a film, as I felt this was a sort of more of a question mark, or I don't know, maybe a more like a, yes, sordid version.
Yes.
Evocative.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Okay. So we all had slightly different takes from it initially, expectations going in terms of what we liked about the film. I thought we'd start on the positive and look for the positives. And so for this one, what about Joel? What did you like about it? You definitely enjoyed it.
Hey, I really loved Prince Charles beefed up for this role. The last time I saw that actor, Josh O'Connor, was in The Crown, and he was sort of playing the scrawny, dweeby Prince Charles.
The same ears, though.
Yeah, and then this time, yeah, he's on the muscle mass, and yeah, I thought he was great in it. I mean, in terms of what I liked, I actually really liked how, again, I was going into it thinking this was going to be like a lighthearted rom-com, maybe in a similar vein to Wimbledon. I'd not really associated Zendaya with kind of quite serious roles. I've never seen Dune. I've never seen a film with Zendaya in. I've only just seen her with Spider-Man. So what I really liked was the kind of complex, I think, characters that we had at heart. You know, it wasn't superficial. Each, you know, character had their own, you know, flaws. It was very fascinating, I think, as the film progressed, kind of seeing those, you know, flaws and those behaviors come out. And it really made me think about each character and what they're bringing to the table. And I think that combination and that focus on the three central characters, it just made for some very interesting, you know, moments and scenes. And to me, that was very, very fascinating. And it just kind of kept me thinking whilst I was in the cinema.
Goodness, that's what an answer, Joel, to start with. I was going to say... I mean, you've really gone into depth there. I was going to say, quick point of interest, the Spider-Man connection, there is one, before I let Kim give us her first thoughts. But all of the actresses who have played, I think it's Mary Jo in Spider-Man, have been a lead in a tennis film. Emma Stone was in Battle of the Sexes, yes. Kirsten Dunst in Wimbledon, and now Zendaya. That was a bit of trivia. I had to get in there, Kim. Link. Sorry. Yes.
No, that's good. I was just about to say, on the subject of the actors, I thought it was very well acted, like from the three main leads. And although it did take me about halfway through to realize it was Prince Charles from The Crown, I was like, oh, that's him, isn't it? And I really liked, and also similarly, I failed to recognize Mike Faist, who plays Art. And I was like, I know this guy, I know his face. And he played, I can't remember the name of the character, but the guy in West Side Story.
West Side Story, yeah.
Is one of the leading members of the gang. And he was brilliant in that. So I thought it was well cast. But my favourite bit of the film, which is probably not anyone else's favourite bit, I really loved the bit where Patrick, who's sort of, you know, lowly ranked, having to play these challenges, he rocks up, he tries to check into his hotel and his card is declined because he just doesn't have the funds. And he goes to the tournament and tries to get an advance on his prize money, which they can't do. So he ends up having to sleep in his car. And I just thought that really encapsulated some of the realities of, you know, the struggles that players
and
have
podcasting.
On the circuit. Mm. So,
yeah, the Tennis Weekly bank card is in a very similar position. Yeah.
Well, we'll see about that. But yeah, I just thought that was a nice... it's obviously not a nice situation for anyone to be in, but I think actually they did bring some of the kind of realities of the tour into it, you know, ever so slightly. The rest of it was kind of very much dramatic. I don't know if some of this stuff goes down on the tennis circuit. Maybe it does. But I thought that was, I really liked the fact they sort of highlighted that in a small way.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done, definitely. And Sarah, what about you? What were the standout things that you particularly liked?
So I agree. I think the characterization was great. I feel like, I loved the music. I loved...
Yeah, it was vibey, wasn't it?
It was good music.
Techno.
Yeah.
But we also had some piano in there as well. And some
religious
music.
Kind of music, yeah.
Oh, the choral, that was wild, yeah.
It was, yeah, I loved that. I loved the pace. It was exciting. I loved the fashion. I mean, I just seen Zendaya's... hamming up to the tennis theme on this promo tour so much had made it so much fun for kind of spectators and celeb watchers. I mean, I think she probably lifted that a little bit from Margot Robbie doing that with Barbie last year, but just there's so much more fun I think you can have with tennis as a theme. I mean, the little footballs
Sarah, tennis balls.
We'll bleep that out.
Sorry, the tennis balls on stilettos. I apologize. God, imagine getting a football on a stiletto.
Big heel.
In the actual film, I loved the fashion as well. I mean, I thought the product placement was pretty obscene, but at the same, you know, there was Origina, Chanel, Uniqlo, Coca-Cola. I don't know, every 2 minutes there
on
was something
running,
else.
Slow-mo of shoes.
Yeah.
Particularly grating.
Yes. I mean, I do find that to be a bit of a distraction in films, but in this I honestly was just having so much fun. I mean, I I didn't care too much about that. And then also I just thought, well, tennis is so full of this branding all the time. Every elite player is a brand ambassador. It didn't, I know people who found that really annoying, but in the film, I just thought, well, that does speak to elite tennis or what the limited knowledge I have of it. But yeah, I mean, I also just fancied Josh O'Connor so much in this film that
So
I
did
found
Joel.
that
He
quite
already said it.
frustrating.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone in the film did, to be honest. Yeah,
Yeah.
true.
I mean, I thought in the end, though, tennis almost felt a bit like less important to the plot, really. It was just a glamorous location and a good way to study competition between genders and like the idea of having to retire and what Zendaya's character Tashi valued in men and the men that she wanted to be desired by. I mean, how people respect each other. In the end, I thought that the actual sport was pretty inconsequential.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, with other sports films, there's always a big event, and Wimbledon is centered around a Grand Slam, and there was no build up to the big event or like a final at a Grand Slam. And the more I was kind of watching this film, I agree with you. I think it would have almost been a distraction from the dialogue and the kind of the character introspectives that we got. So I'm really glad they didn't focus on that. And then, yeah, we were sort of ending up in this unique environment at a challenger tour level, which, thinking that in Hollywood, you're like, kind of like, hang on, is that right?
It did feel a bit strange that they ended up at a challenger, because it was very, that's a deep cut for most people in tennis. Yet the tennis that they kind of promoted around this, and the trailer was very tennis heavy, but as you say, Sarah, tennis was almost just the vehicle of winning and losing, and the metaphor of the fact that there are winners and there are losers, and the court was the perfect place to bring that to life. But ultimately, I did kind of feel like if you took away the tennis, I might have enjoyed the film a little bit more, which is not something that I thought I would be saying. But that's kind of me giving a little bit of a taste as to what I didn't like quite so much. And a lot of it is tennis related, but maybe I'll let, shall I let Kim, do you want to let rip a little bit? Do you have anything to say about how convincing the tennis was?
I mean, I didn't analyze the actual tennis so much because I kind of feel like with all of these films where they're obviously not professional sports people yet they're trying to like learn to a degree the sort
It's
of
hard to
specifics of
get
the
too
sport.
angry, isn't it? Even though
Yeah.
inside me, I am like, that is a pancake grip. You can't get to a professional level with a pancake serve.
Or like the bouncing of the ball. I'm like, look, practice bouncing.
The first lot of ball bouncing, I was like, that's not how professionals would bounce a ball
No, it was
before
like, here
serving.
we catch it.
That's how I would do it, you know. But I'm not going to criticize them too much for that because I don't think, yeah, like that's really affecting the enjoyment of the film. I mean, maybe it does to
Maybe
you
just me
guys,
then,
but
yeah. Sorry.
Chris, there was a scene in the film where there are a really nice party, and the two guys are looking at a poster of Zendaya, and it is that infamous, now infamous photo poster for tennis fans at least, where Zendaya is holding it in a pancake grip. And when I saw this in the cinema, I was just looking at the guys and I was just thinking, I wonder if they're thinking that she's holding the racket wrong.
I think they must have been, but I do think she's been very humble by saying she did her best. At every screening, she does open with that because obviously they're putting it out to a tennis audience. And so I think she's been very, very good about caveating that. And I do think that it's almost like, I think I just took it quite seriously. And I think I need to suspend all sort of belief in that sort of thing, because we've actually had people on previously on the podcast who've explained the difficulty of it. And there's so many tricky parts of learning how to do it. So really, I think I'm just hyper frustrated by like the ball bouncing and some of the filming choices, not necessarily the performance of the actors when it came to the tennis, because the grunts were truly wild. The whole of the cinema I was in was erupting in laughter, which is, I mean, absolutely not necessarily what you'd think they would want in that environment when it was quite a tense scene and an artist sort of doing a girlish moan at times. And some of the sweating levels and this very, very slow-mos they did, I just felt like that was what took away from the tennis experience from me, because anyone who's watched tennis, that's definitely not what it's like. And the director actually said himself he finds tennis quite boring. And so I think I maybe had my back up a little bit because they're rejecting the sport and rewriting the sport so it's more interesting, more sexy, and more fun to watch from their perspective. But as like a purist, I'm like, what needs to change? But maybe that's just me and Sarah. Did you get frustrated by the tennis that you saw?
Oh, no, not remotely. And I don't know what a pancake grip is.
Tuesday.
I know. I mean, yeah, I just thought it didn't factor in at all. I just thought I liked how they filmed it, the swinging around shots all the time, camera shots, not tennis shots. I think that what I liked about it was that it didn't take anything too seriously, and that obviously extends to the sport, which is not necessarily always the best thing. But I think I was trying to think about what other sports this story could have been transplanted onto, and actually there probably isn't any other that would have men and women as equals in a world where you're not playing as a big team.
Mm-hmm.
They create these gigantic, super rich superstars. I mean, football is quite different. I mean, there's loads of money in Formula One, but there aren't so many, you know, it's not women's sport at that level. So I feel like I wasn't frustrated by tennis at all, but I am obviously completely ignorant. And it did just seem like, oh yeah, this is the glamorous and also the not so glamorous world of tennis. And I liked that they had, I mean, everything about it was quite cool. Like they made that challenger look cool. They were at Stanford in all their cool, like,
yeah,
AmeriCollege t-shirts and stuff.
I did like, there were quite a few Easter eggs in there. And I did like, I did notice at the beginning, on I think his Art Donaldson's arm, he had the RF logo as AD, which I noticed, and I was like, oh, that was quite a nice attention to detail. So I quite liked how, you know, when I was watching it, I could watch it from like being the tennis nerd and yeah, trying to spot the Easter eggs as we went. And
it was a bit like they were in a challenger, felt like actors were in a challenger.
Kim, I was naturally disappointed though. Then they got to Cincinnati. I was like, "Where's the Gerber baby? The Gerber baby's going to turn up on the."
Sarah, this is not your section. The Gerber baby.
Cree baby advertising board. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
but alas.
I think. Am I right in thinking that some of Tashi's, you know, when she's in the crowd cheering on, and actually maybe her story in itself, a little bit modelled on Mirka Federer. Queen of tennis,
yes,
because Mirka was a promising player, career ended early with a foot injury, becomes, you know, Roger Federer's manager and, you know, driving force behind his career. And, you know, is this been taken and translated into this film?
Wait, are you saying it's about Roger and Rafa?
Oh, no, I didn't mean that, but I meant the Mirka, Roger, Art Tashi.
I was like, maybe. I mean, there was the handhold at the Laver Cup, just saying.
Well, oh yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that inspired it.
Kim, you say that. I mean, there was also, I don't know if you notice, everyone, the line that was picked up, it's embarrassing to still be playing tennis at 40. So it was sort of alluding, I feel, to Mr. and Mrs. Federer.
Wow. Yeah, kind of was, but then I did find out that the writer, when he got into tennis, it was 2018, he was watching the US Open final between Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka. So I believe that's a reference to Serena Williams still playing until she was 40, I believe. But I hope that that's not true, because we were all there for the farewell and we loved it. But then now we do have to move on to the big question. Sarah, you might have to try and invent a memory of watching the Wimbledon film, but maybe we'll just go to Joel for this one. How does it compare to Wimbledon, the film? One of your favorites, not one of my favorites, because I do believe that's, if we're talking about reality in tennis, Paul Bettany was probably over 40 at that point, swinging a racket around.
Are you asking me who's going to win in a match between Peter Colt and Art Donaldson?
I think that could be a very good question if that is the lead in Wimbledon.
You know, I think they're two very different films, and they're two very different takes on tennis. And I'd arguably say that, you know, Wimbledon is an easier watch. I think it's more one dimensional. It's got a happy ending. People like
there's
it because
sexual
of the tradition.
Tension.
Yeah, it opens around, you know, Wimbledon, and you've got, you know, Paul Bettany and Kirsten Dunst, and you know, it's a fairly standard rom-com, which, you know, there's always a time and a place for. But certainly, I think with this, just listening to you guys speak, this very much is more using tennis as the vehicle to tell a story, and a tennis match to tell a story, you know, between, you know, three main characters, you know, a relationship between all three of them. And to me, that, as I say, was a lot more multi-dimensional, multifaceted, and it just it left me in a point where I didn't know where this was going to end up. I sort of knew where Wimbledon was going to end up, but I liked how this film kept me on my toes, and I was almost naively going into it thinking Zendaya was going to be just sort of, I don't know, maybe like Damsel in Distress wasn't going to be that complicated maybe as a character. But, you know, when later on in the film, when, you know, she, you know, is married and, you know, spoiler alert, you know, almost like, you know, goes into a kind of affair situation.
Again, it's a spoiler, Joel. That's a big spoiler.
It's fair.
Spoiler alert. But it just added a layer of complexity that I just wasn't expecting. And just, yeah, added a bit more intrigue to my viewing experience.
Tashi was definitely a more complex character than the Kirsten Dunst role in Wimbledon, that's yes, for sure.
Lizzie Bradbury, I believe.
You're not getting any extra points for this, but we'll take your word for it because no one else can fact check that right now. But on the topic that we've mentioned in terms of kind of reading a bit too much into the tennis, the question I kind of put would be around, are we drawing too many parallels? Because the writer of this also says it is pure fantasy. Because of his interest in tennis, he's kind of rewritten how tennis works. And he rewrote it because he says in tennis, there's so much projection from fans onto the players, onto the personalities. They really do this. And commentators do this all the time, whether it's kind of about their traits, their sexualities, their interests, or all sorts. We see it, and this is definitely something you can see in this film. So do we all need to kind of, well, not all of us, but some really embraced it? Do I maybe need to lighten up and kind of live in this sort of the messy tennis, bi-curious sort of dreamland with the characters? And is that partly why it's become so popular? Because it is sort of this fantasy of the imagination. And Sarah, I'll come to you first.
I think so, because I think at its core, this is, you know, a film about two schoolboys who were rivals, which everybody kind of loves a story like that. They grow up, they get this fantasy over the most beautiful woman that they've ever seen, and then spend their lifetimes kind of fighting over them. And yeah, she, from the age of 18, commands that completely and plays them like pawns in game. And I think that is fundamentally just a very fun and intriguing way of power dynamics, sexual dynamics, gender dynamics. So I kind of think that if you were to abandon, you know, rigor and which is very hard to do, I think it does allow you to free up this ability to just see it as some fun silliness. I mean, I haven't seen anything before that looked at I guess the ménage à trois relationship that wasn't totally leaning into like the femme fatale thing with the woman, or also just hyper sensationalized the sex part, which I think here, like, you don't actually see much sex. It's all suggestive, which yes, is quite rare in cinema now.
Yeah. And I also think that's quite interesting because the writer said initially there wasn't that connection between Art and Patrick, and that's something that the director really wanted to include to join up the triangle, because quite often it's seen as like a single event, whereas they're joined in that relationship in all manners of ways. And so I think that nature of that triangle actually does lead to very different perceptions of things that are happening. So I do think from that perspective and kind of recommending the rewatch, I think, Sarah, you might have already convinced me that I should give this one a second go and just forget about the tennis and maybe just concentrate on the stories and suspend belief and kind of project onto them a little bit. And kind of talking about projecting onto them, a question that I have that I'm trying to get to the bottom of. I was on the Reddit forums afterwards trying to figure this out because some of the cues done by the director maybe didn't quite hit with me. But is Patrick in love with Art and Art loves Patrick, but he isn't in love with him, but he is in love with Tashi and Tashi is in love with fill in the blank? Is she in love with tennis? Is she in love with power? Is she in love with control?
I think Patrick just loves sex, to be honest. I think that was his vibe, I think. Wherever, whenever, in the back of a car.
A pansexual king.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was, yeah, was so quite interesting about his character, because I think that portrayal in the past would have just been the macho man going after the girl, you know, in that sort of portrayal. But actually this one,
high fives, all that sort of thing. It wasn't like that, this one necessarily, yeah, exactly. The way that it panned out.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like overly macho in that way. You know, he was bisexual.
He was pretty buff though. He was pretty,
yeah.
In that sense. So there is definitely the nature of being an athlete allows you to sort of play the macho type in some ways physically, even if that's not how you're presented off the court. But on that question of what do you think is Tashi's motivation in this, Kim, would you like to hazard a guess? Is it she loves tennis? She loves winning, potentially?
Yeah, I think for me, when the film ended, because it sort of ends on a bit of a... Or all of a sudden, you think, oh, I'm not quite sure what to make of that. But I did... My first thought was, oh, yeah, she didn't really, truly love either of them. She was just playing them off against each other. Like,
she loved manipulation.
Yeah, and she just wanted to become the biggest success that she could. And she wasn't able to as a player because of the injury. And therefore, the only way she could then do that was as a coach and as arts manager. And when it looked like, you know, his career was on the slide, she was just doing what she could to kind of keep him winning, keep him playing. And then, I don't know, at the end, I was kind of wondering... Because, you know, Patrick had asked her to start coaching him. So maybe if Patrick beat Art in this match, she had moved over to coach him purely because she saw him as the next avenue of success. And she was just kind of going to go with whoever offered her the best chance for personal success. So I felt like she was, yeah, using them for her own ends rather than really deeply considering their...
Almost like she's weighing up the decision rather than following her heart in these situations. And on that point, Sarah, when it comes to, there is obviously a big match. That's not too much of a spoiler. And she does say that that she will break up with Art if he doesn't win. And do you think that she meant that? It felt like potentially she didn't want to not be attached to the winner in that sense. But did she mean business when she said that?
I thought that she just said that to motivate him. I mean, we weren't given that many insights into what their relationship was like with her as his coach. We kind of saw it, the dawn of it when they were younger, the suggestion of it happening, and then it cut to their adult life. And it seemed like she was pretty tough love about that when he was flagging. So I thought that she was just using that as a way of trying to get him fired up. But I also did think that she would have gone to coach Patrick because I think she clearly is someone who wants the challenge. I think she would have immediately lost respect for Art the second he retires. And I think that it was always about attaching herself to the winner and her being an agent of power and victory. And I think that, I guess, if you already, like, so much of the film seemed to be dominated by the idea of them being at the top, you know, completely living in hotels, rich, traveling the world, perfect child. I feel like there was always this slight suggestion of her being intrigued by a different life, a new
not
challenge, a new thing to carve out. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There wasn't necessarily a huge amount of purpose for her.
And the relationship with her child, I think, I didn't almost believe that relationship to be as genuine it was partly depicted, because the fact that I questioned her motivations as to how she actually felt about everyone in the film, to be honest, and what she was really looking for that interaction.
Really.
Yeah, I think it was.
Art was closer to the child, it felt like, than her.
Absolutely.
The scene where he was in bed with her sort of spoke to her.
Yeah, he really does love them both. Almost that she wanted to pick the safe bet that she could make into success, but then she didn't necessarily want to just bask in that success. She wanted it to always keep getting better and growing and being ambitious. And when you see the campaigns, that there's an image from an advertising campaign sort of looms across throughout and throughout the film. And you just know the person who's behind that is Tashi. She's the mastermind behind it. And I think for a lot of people, that could be the comparison maybe with Mirka in some ways, that she is obviously in charge of a lot of the business sides of what Roger Federer gets up to as well. But we will be coming back to talk about more of this after the break. We'll take a very quick break now, but in the second half, we'll be discussing, is this a tennis movie or a teenage romp? A definitive verdict. We'll be talking about Zendaya and Oscar buzz, and we'll be unveiling our review scores. So don't go anywhere.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, where we are reviewing the movie Challengers. If you're watching us on video, well, you've not seen an ad break. We're still here. But now it's time to get into some of the performances. So we have touched upon them previously. There's been all sorts of talk around the media, around Oscar buzz for Zendaya in her breakout lead role. This is something that I think it would be great to get a take on. There are winners and losers when it comes to the match. Are there winners and losers when it comes to the acting? Do we think that Zendaya was fully convincing in all aspects of the role? We've had a little hint that maybe Patrick might have been the standout for a couple of people, maybe Joel especially.
Is that for his acting, Joel, or other reasons?
Yeah, I thought he gave a great portrayal of just what it's like to be a tennis player at that level, ranked, you know, outside the top 200s.
I think he was the most convincing tennis player. I want to make that clear, like, yeah, in the technique, in the fact that he made choices on what the serve would be like. It was a bit technically funky as well.
I loved his outfit as well. It was a bit more ramshackle. I felt like Art Donaldson was a bit, for me, it was a bit almost like too pristine.
It was a bit Federer-esque in the Uniqlo, a bit early Djokovic.
Yeah, whereas Patrick, it was like, I'm going to go to the boot of my car, see what's in there, and I'm going to throw on the baggy shorts.
A bit like how you get ready for work then, Joel, to see what you can rummage together.
Exactly.
I think you just really connect with the character. Maybe you see kind of a little bit of yourself in him. Yes. But Sarah, on Zendaya, do tell us what you thought of the acting, because this is obviously a very big breakout role for her.
I think she's brilliant in it. I'm trying to work out whether I think that's because of the material or her performance. I actually don't think that the film, even though you can't take your eyes off her and she's in control the whole time, I don't actually feel that the material gives her a huge opportunity to show off much range. So while I think she's great and she's totally in command, like, we weren't getting any insight into her emotions. She was a cold character. Really well, but I don't necessarily think that we saw everything that Zendaya's capable of. But I think that I do agree, like, Josh O'Connor, it was a much more loose role. It gave him an opportunity to have a bit more emotion, a little bit of struggle. It was just quite fun to watch him be this sort of Lothario, a bit boys will be boys. It was, I think there was a bit more range in the way that that role was written. But I mean, I did think Zendaya was fab. Do I think that it would be on par with the super emotional, epic roles that often win Oscars? Possibly not.
I agree.
Yeah. For me, I didn't feel personally connected to any of the characters particularly. Like, you know, when a film really hits you and you sort of maybe cry, or you're laughing along, or you
not
just feel like really
Kim.
Moved at the end of it. So I just didn't feel like I cared enough about their stories. And I, for me, a film that's going to be memorable and Oscar worthy, I need to really feel emotion when I'm watching it. And I wasn't getting that. But I don't know if the film were ever intended to be that.
So Kim, were you team Patrick or team Art during
sounds
the
like
film?
Team Nobody.
Or team
who
Nobody.
Did I want to
you
win?
Just said Nobody, yeah.
And that's a question to you, both of you as well, Chris and Sarah.
I think I have more sympathy for Art. I think he does need it more. So I think I
wanted Art to win.
I'm rooting for him.
No,
because...
what? Patrick all the way.
Yeah.
Art never had an affair. I just thought the others were a bit immoral.
In the moment, I didn't want Patrick to let him win. But then on reflection, I actually think that despite Patrick having a lot less financially, Patrick has a lot more in many ways. So I already felt like he was my winner. So the match became futile, the result of the match, because as I said, tennis, it's not that important in the film, right? But I don't know. I don't know. That's a cop out. I feel like everyone else is team Patrick and maybe Kim and I are just, well, at least it's 50-50.
I'm team Art because I felt like, you know, Zendaya and Patrick had got up to, well, I shouldn't say Zendaya, but Tashi had got up to no
the
good.
Spoilers on this episode.
I felt sorry for Art. So
yeah. On the subject of Zendaya, one thing I would say is that she plays young Tashi very, very well. I mean, she looks a lot younger than her age. A lot of people think this is the first woman that she said that she's played. Personally, I was less convinced in some of the later scenes than I was in the early scenes. I found it quite hard to forget the fact that we've seen someone who plays a very convincing 18-year-old is suddenly now playing a very empowered woman who's a mother and running the show. And all that's changed is she's got a bob. So for me, I wasn't sure that worked, the cutting between so much. Mm. But Sarah, what was your take on that?
No, I completely agree. I found the flashbacks pretty hard to buy. I mean, I liked so much of the film is told in flashback, going between this tennis match.
Did it jump too much?
I think a little bit.
Do you? I didn't actually mind that, but I did think that it was, you know, she does look young. I mean, she's actually not that. She's
27, yeah.
27? Yeah, so she's young, but she's not. She does look younger than her age, and I think that was great in the teenage scenes. But it was a bit strange to see her with a child. I mean, which is a ridiculous thing to say. She's old enough to have a child, but I don't know that they did enough to make that really convincing. I don't feel that she carried herself any differently as a grown woman as she did when she was a prodigal talent.
It felt like she was playing an adult, and maybe that's a reference to the fact that she almost stayed the age she was when she got injured because she never got over it. That's kind of what I thought maybe it could be connected to. But I do agree that some people do grow up very early, potentially in terms of their attitude, and maybe that was the case. But for me, it was just I couldn't see it necessarily. The different ages I thought worked a bit better, even though the two. Well, actually, Patrick does look a lot older than the 18-year-old he would have been playing. But for me, that was a little bit of a sticking point.
I was just thinking maybe if they had shown more of her vulnerability after the injury, it would have been easier to get, firstly, to connect with her, but also to get that sense of before and after. But I don't actually think that they showed her be really, truly knocked. I'm sure that was a deliberate choice.
Very
but
angry.
But she already was pretty different. Yeah. I mean, you got this sense of her, like, obviously she would be confident. She's a competitor. She's not a team player. Mm. So she always probably was like that, but
it's like,
certainly
if there was
didn't...
one moment, it would have been after that really bad injury, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
Absolutely would have been. And I guess now we're talking a bit about the nuance of characters. I mean, Luca Guadagnino is very famous for kind of the nuance that he has in his characters, the fact he invites speculation. It's very much a case where it's open to interpretation, and that's the case with this script and with his direction. A lot goes unspoken, and I was going to get, maybe we'll go to Kim for this one first. Was it too unspoken at times? A lot of it's open to interpretation. Did we like the fact there were things that we didn't always know and questions that we still have to answer? Or do we think maybe we would have liked to find out a few more things as we went along?
Yeah, in a way, I think I would have preferred if it was a bit more obvious, because I'm just someone that doesn't pick up on really nuanced like looks or glances. And I was left feeling a little bit confused, perhaps as to, but then maybe like you said, that is part of the speculation, but I'd almost rather have it thrown in my face a little bit more.
So you're more from the Wimbledon school of thought, you know, the Paul Bettany, Kirsten Dunst, Boy
Meets
Girl.
Well, that was, yeah, so predictable. I'm not saying it has to follow like a really traditional format, but and I guess it, you know, invites discussion. So I'm kind of on the fence a bit, but I do think I was a bit confused at the end and maybe throughout a little bit.
And on that topic, Sarah, so obviously you've seen probably more films by the director than we might have. Is this something that you think has been dialed up or dialed down? For an example, based on Call Me By Your Name or some of the other works that you've seen?
I feel like actually dialed down. I mean, I thought that this was a way more straight down the line film. A lot of the others are slower. They're a lot more sincere. A lot less silly. And I think that, yeah, this time there was a little bit more exposition than I was probably expecting. I think that probably helped, is one of the reasons why I liked it so much more. But I do still think so much was reliant on those, you know, glances here and there, characters catching each other's eye, the way they touch,
moving a stool forwards, sharing food, those sorts of things that when you look back, you realize the connection they had, or that actually there were other things that were at work at the time.
Actually, food's a good one.
I can see that now. Like, even just having the conversation about it makes you think about it slightly differently. And Joel, were you picking up on all those things that Sarah's mentioning?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because I think there was a bit in the first half where, because there was a bit of a lack of dialogue, particularly maybe towards the beginning, you wondered when's this actually going to get going?
It was quite slow. I do agree.
Yeah, when's this going to get going? And I think if there's one thing I would say that sort of maybe held it back for me was the fact that maybe it could have got going sooner. It sort of got more interesting and more juicy for me, you know, as it went on. And maybe that's because it didn't have crash, bang, wallop, script, action straight from the get-go. And we were sort of calmly introduced to these characters, and it was almost like this sea of calm that slowly unraveled into some really tense action towards the end.
Yeah, it doesn't follow the traditional path of some movies in terms of that. The inciting incident, I believe, is when they met Tashi, and then after that it's almost like the hero, or this one, the heroine's journey, it's quite split, because it is this triangle of the shared journey that they're on, with Zendaya kind of as the central figure. So I do think there are moments where it picks up, moments where they pass it kind of the reins over a little bit in terms of the story. So I think that probably does lend itself to having those different paces, because different players are having different paces of things that are happening, or the frustration of recovery from an injury takes time. And I think there are elements of that I think the pacing helps. But for me, there were times where it was almost like a techno riot, you know, and you're really going through it. And then there are moments when I'm like, honestly, during the tennis, I could just fast forward, you know, some of the earlier scenes. I know I keep saying I didn't like the tennis, but
I honestly, when I saw like it opening at a challenger, I was like, oh, the film will end at US Open Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Men's final.
Will he make the US Open?
This is going to be like a throwaway scene of like, oh, this is the start. But, you know, the more actually I think it focused just on one match, it really did take one element away to gain, just have that laser focus on the characters and the portrayal. And to me, that was, what was so fascinating, their identities.
And on that sort of subject, I think that kind of leads us to talk about the fact that I think this was the writer who said that one of the things that he really likes about the fact there is this sort of trio, this sort of the threesome element to this, is that it's very messy, it's very complex. And he almost likes the fact and thinks the audiences like to watch something like that on screen, because they think, thank goodness my life's more simple, or it's almost very kind of it's in a land where you don't have to kind of, it makes you feel better about your real life. Maybe we don't all have situations that are as complex as that. Do you think that that's something that audiences have connected with, that they can kind of live through the poor decisions of some of the characters or some of the messiness on screen rather than have to kind of face it in their own lives. Kim?
I think, yeah, it's always like good where there's things you can relate to or even something, you know, like it's significant, like a career ending injury. You've got to then pick up the pieces and move forward somehow. But it's always good. It's like almost that's what powers the rest of her life so far, what drives her. And I guess it's, you know, all about the implications of things that happen, whether they're decisions you've chosen or just like accidents, like what happened with Tashi on the court when she had that injury. So, yeah, I think for me, having those relatable moments is, I guess, reassuring the human experience. Like, we've, you know, we all kind of share elements of
we'll it. We have setbacks ourselves.
Exactly. And but I just didn't feel like I warmed to the characters, especially maybe Tashi's character, as much as I could have done. And therefore, maybe I sound really heartless, don't I? But I didn't really have that emotional involvement.
We wanted to see some more vulnerability from her, didn't we?
But maybe she shut off that side of herself. On the subject of the element of the fact that there is this sort of the three-way relationship, this is another thing that, do we think that this was, there's a lot of sexual tension going on, and we did have this sort of debate that earlier, just before we started recording, as to whether I'm kind of the mindset that if they didn't fully close the triangle, that it wouldn't be quite capture the imaginations of the audiences in the way that it has on Twitter and amongst younger audiences. But do we think it played a little bit too much in that sort of the world of sexual tension as opposed to the world of storytelling? Sarah, should we go to you, the expert? I see everyone's looking a bit confused. Maybe it's the question.
No.
Was it too provocative for no reason? You know, the scenes in the sauna with naked people in a dry sauna when they never would be there for recovery?
Well, I mean, I didn't know that, obviously, that
the break-in sets, yeah.
I think that it's one of the film's strengths is that it really does not lean into nudity. I mean, I don't care about films that have nudity, but it was refreshing to that this was able to conjure up such an environment of tension without leaning on people ripping each other's clothes off. We didn't really see any of that. Even one of the few sex scenes that there was, you kind of saw it from, you saw it, the build-up and the aftermath. You didn't really see anything happening. I think it strengthened the film because everything else told you that these people really, really want each other. I didn't feel like it was let down by that. I mean, I don't think it got in the way of the story. I think it really was the story. And it wasn't all sex, 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 but it was, oh God, like, who does she love more? Are these two best friends, like, do they get off on the idea that they are both going after the same woman and have been since they were teenagers? I don't know. I mean, I guess it's this competition on the court, competition off the court, but I didn't feel like it was a distraction from the story. I just thought it was the story.
It gives me kind of, this is a Taylor Swift reference for anyone who doesn't know. Sarah is a big Taylor Swift aficionado. It reminds me of a song, it's called The Archer, where it just kind of bubbles under but never quite gets to like that big moment. And I think you can really appreciate the fact that it doesn't, and almost like the song more for the fact that it does stay within the lines and it does kind of hold itself back at times from going into the full sort of gratuitous nudity or, you know, something that might devalue someone's character at times potentially. So that's my Taylor Swift reference for you, Sarah.
Thank you, I appreciated it. I think it's a good one.
Thank you. Yesterday with a Lost reference, which maybe wasn't quite as appreciated because that series
not as relevant.
20 years out of date.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
But maybe someone appreciated the Taylor Swift one. But we'll move on now to kind of the ending. We've spoken about it a little bit. We'll do this a little bit quick fire in terms of, were we satisfied with the ending? So this is where we've done, probably if you reach this point, the film spoilers have been given, but were we satisfied with the ending? And we'll start with Joel, because I'm thinking, maybe no, I can see on your face.
I've written three words down.
I've written
three words down to describe the film, and the third word specifically is relating to the ending. So my three words were raunchy, complex, and cop out.
I like that.
Is that a word?
Cop out.
Yeah, actually, hyphenated one word. Yes.
Yes. Okay, we'll give it to you.
But specifically, the ending and the fact that that sort of theme of ambiguity that sort of was going throughout the film, it sort of stayed right until the very end, because we had this very open ending where we didn't get a clear winner. And you know, of course, that's the director's choice, and that was, you know, clearly a considered choice, but it just sort of left me feeling like we've invested so much into this, and I'm like, who's going to come out on top? Tennis is a very competitive game, and we didn't really get a definitive answer.
But was that, I still kind of refer back to kind of what I said in the first half, that I think that the answer is that the winner isn't the person who wins on the court necessarily. And so that's why I think that the result actually doesn't matter in that sense. So I would say I was more satisfied. I think actually if he ran into the net, then maybe
a point penalty. I was waiting for the umpire to come in with some rules.
Well, the umpire didn't actually hold back. A very charismatic umpire who really did make themselves known. But I was going to say I did quite like the ending, more so than I liked probably the film at large. I think I quite liked the fact that
I'm the opposite. I think
maybe we are the opposite in many ways, Joel. Not just
I mean, what were your three?
I'm the Archie
or
Patrick,
three words?
Hopefully not. My three words. Okay, so these are censored. I went for stylish, homoerotic trash. But the reason why I say that, and the reason why I've used the word trash, is because I do think it's very like in a cool way. Like it's very much now that like it's not in terms of not taking it seriously. Like, for example, The Crown, I've once described as being, it's like, it's really like watchable, very expensive trash, but it's great to watch. So I think it's more like in terms of like trash TV sort of thing, of like, it is great, it's super stylish, but for me,
ultimately throwaway?
A little bit. I'm almost convinced by Sarah that I should give it a second go, because I think maybe if I take away some of my frustrations, I might focus more on the important parts of the story. But we'll go to Sarah now, in terms of what you thought of the ending and maybe the three words that I set up as homework.
I was satisfied by the ending. I mean, everyone likes a neat conclusion, but I got the sense that this was, while obviously it's the climax of this film, and it was their reunion. They obviously hadn't seen each other in a long time before this challenger match or tournament. But I just got the impression that this was going to continue this game. You know, this will not be the last time that they
play or cross paths.
Play, come to blows over.
There is no clean ending, basically.
Oh my God, is there going to be a sequel called Futures?
Sarah's like, what does that mean?
no clue. Sorry, sort of laugh, but yeah. I'm very ignorant as discussed, but no, I liked it. I thought that it was it was fun. Like, I mean, I keep going back to this really stupid and like very basic word, but I just don't think you get enough fun, clever films, and I do think this was one. And I think if had it had a conclusive ending, there wouldn't have this. It would have been a shame, given that so much of the film is all about suggestion and tension. It would have been quite strange for it to have actually given you the goods.
You can't take it too high or too low in that sense, because once the tension's reached that point, it would be a letdown if you deflated the tension in that way. So you almost have to never quite get to that point. That's why I liked the ending. I thought it made a lot of sense to me. But
so,
Kim,
so is fun one of your three words then?
She said fun, fun, fun.
Is it fun, fun, fun?
It's not a Beach Boys song.
Okay, I think my words would be steamy, riotous.
It is definitely that. Fun.
And pacey. Ooh, I hate that word, but maybe we'll go for that. I don't know. Slick. Maybe that's a better word, actually.
Yeah, similar to the stylish. Yeah. I like that. And Kim, come on, bring us home.
So my three words, we've all gone for something different, which is nice. Thought there might be clashes. I've gone for sordid.
Ooh, challenging would be good. Yeah, sordid, hello.
It's sordid. I mean, it's not that sordid.
Of you. Yeah, Jesus.
Sordid, edgy, and challenging. because obviously it's all about people challenging each other, I suppose, on court. But also as a viewer, I was a bit challenged by the ending and trying to understand it all.
It's almost like they meant that with the name of Challenger.
Yeah.
I can just about see that. So we'll end on, before we go into our scores, I think we have an indication as to how they might go based on listening to the podcast. But we'll talk quickly about whether we think this will bring new fans to tennis, because tennis is having a moment. Tennis court is having a moment in terms of the dressing for this that's really catching on. But Sarah, has this convinced you to pay a little bit more attention to the tennis tour? And will we be finding you at a Challenger event anytime soon?
No more than I already was. I mean, this is the
time Madrid
of year where
10 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the time of year where I think this is my year. I'm going to get into tennis. I'll be really good in time for Wimbledon. I'll get it all. I'll understand it. And, you know, I'll spend my weekends at the club.
Yeah.
But, I don't think that this
Which
film
club? Yeah.
will do that.
Yeah.
I don't think this film will do. Well, I think this isn't a film for, people who, well, clearly maybe it's not entirely a film for people who are really serious about tennis, or that will bring them in any more than tennis court will. I'm sure it'll be nice.
I think that makes sense, and I think for Joel and Kim, we are aware that tennis isn't all sort of sexual tension and sordid past between players necessarily. Do you think that people will cross over to become fans of the sport, or if they do, will they be a little bit let down that it's not all Patrick and Art and Tashi on the tennis court?
I think if they do join, well, not join, but become tennis watchers, I think they'd like the sort of Nick Kyrgioses of the world, just for that sort of... Well, there was a few moments in the film where they were audibly shouting obscenities on the court, and it did actually make me laugh a little bit, because I thought, it's a bit of a bad behaviour. But also, you know, there was that incident with Kyrgios and Stan Wawrinka. Bit of nasty comments on the court.
That was it.
It kind of, I did think of that at one point, and I thought we do have some kind of interesting.
That's a very good point, though, that I think that tennis players have universally loved this, because I think maybe they know more about what goes on behind the scenes in the relationship side than what we do. And also they know how hard it is to play tennis. So they also don't expect them to be tennis players. So maybe it's for tennis, non-tennis fans and tennis players. This might be for as an audience. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I think it's tough because we're coming off like your Breakpoint, Netflix slam. There just seems to be lots and lots of things at the moment that are kind of going out to a non-tennis audience. And I don't know if there's like a silver bullet to kind of reel in like non-tennis fans. And I think, you know, listening to kind of Sarah talk today, I think is interesting hearing about like the cultural aspects, like the clothing and the music, for example, and the style. And I think there are ways that can appeal to non-audiences. And I think those are ways that you can do that and achieve that. But I think it would appeal to and bring in people for different reasons than, you know, me and maybe, you know, Chris and Kim, where I'm, you know, keen on the tennis action. I don't think this film would necessarily do that, but it might do maybe on a more cultural level.
And I think it could also be very useful to see about how you can market tennis to a wider audience as well. You know, maybe we'll see more celebrities turning up at tennis games, and the crossover might be more cultural than it is actually rackets in hands and bums on seats in that sense, I think.
I just think, we're in this sort of fact-finding phase. I feel like people know that tennis is out, tennis is there. There's an opportunity to grab a new audience. I just don't think there's an obvious way to do it yet. And we're sort of just learning through, you know, seeing all these things that come out in a mass media setting. And, you know, challenges as, you know, it's a good film, and we'll see how it does and see what its legacy is, you know, over the season.
Absolutely. I think that will be, time will tell when it comes to the impact this will have. It's always hard to tell when you see a lot of people go to the cinema, but is it a good time of year before some great tournaments happen, the Grand Slams? So we might see that there'll be like record attendances or record interest. We'll have to see.
Are we going
to
see Zendaya in the Royal Box at Wimbledon? That's the big question.
Hopefully, bring Tom Holland.
Ooh, I could see that. I could see that.
What were you going to say, Sarah?
I was just going to say that I thinking a bit more in a plain tennis way, but I think that you're right in the way they've marketed that. Well, all the fashion, all the music, making it look really cool, really sexy, very, I mean, really celeb driven. There's something really exciting about elite players. I do think that it could bring in more spectators to the sport who think, I mean, and especially when you have like young players like, I guess, Coco Gauff and like Emma Raducanu, who are these idol type characters who are young, who you could kind of project onto. I think it's also interesting that they've released the film now, which is obviously a perfect time for tennis, but I would not be surprised if this was an Oscar contender. I don't necessarily think the acting performances will win Oscars, but I think the film could be up for one. And the usually score. Those are,
product placement.
And those are, but those are usually released at a completely different time of year. So they've obviously chosen tennis time rather than Oscars time. Maybe to harness either the existing audience or to stir up a feeling of getting people into tennis at the right. I mean, it's not. It's
we
a
hit
film,
tennis
it's
tennis fever, I think, and I think it's a good time to see how this will be released. Will it bubble under like the film, or will it explode into the tennis arena? But final thing we have to do, we have to give our scores. I made everyone write out our scores, so I think it will be we'll reveal to each other what we thought about it. So if everyone's got their scores ready, shall we show what the score? I gave it a 3 on my side, a 3 for Kim, a 4 for Sarah, a 4.5 for Joel.
Gone high. So maybe too high
for anyone listening. That's a pretty good average overall, and so I think whichever way you fall, if you're frustrated by the tennis, there are things to enjoy as well. It was not a 2 from me in this case. But Joel, why wasn't it a perfect 5?
For me, was the ending was one of the main things. The pancake serve grip, couldn't get over that. But just generally speaking,
0.5
relative,
for the pancake serve was taken off.
Relative to other tennis films, I think we got a very distinct, you know, portrayal of the sport that had me thinking, it had me guessing, you know, throughout, you know, the entire length of the film, and it kept me captivated, and it made me experience tennis, I think, in a new way I wasn't expecting. And for someone who, as I say, I've played as a junior, I've worked in tennis, I've been to all the Grand Slams, I've done a podcast for so long, it was just refreshing, I think, just to get a new experience of going to the cinema and watching it.
Was that just because you went to the Everyman and you had, that was your first Everyman experience?
Yeah, nice.
I did go to an Everyman cinema.
A couple
cinema.
Of nice drinks, and you just thought, wow, this is wonderful. Patrick looks
it
amazing.
It may have elevated it. Yes, for all of our listeners, I went to a very posh cinema and I had a beer on a sofa whilst watching it. So yeah, it was a very nice experience.
That's not very tennis core, having a beer necessarily. Well, that does bring an end to our Challengers Film Club episode. We'd like to give a very big thank you to Sarah Carson for joining us. Sarah, where can our listeners find you to follow your writing? And if you've piqued their interest in culture and all things cultural, where should they look for you?
So I'm on X. We're looking at X these days.
Yes.
At Carson Sarah, and you can find my culture section at inews.co.uk, and obviously in the iPaper every day.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for taking the time to come onto the show. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. As always, remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action from the ATP and WTA tours.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. If you are listening to this, you can also watch this. This is posted to YouTube. On YouTube, our handle is Tennis Weekly Pod, and that's the same for Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and X. You can also purchase some wonderful Tennis Weekly merch that we'll be sending to Sarah. That's at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Sarah.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.